Okay, we are live now. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to our inaugural LinkedIn Live session on Breaking Barriers. I'm Meenu Bagla, Chief Marketing Officer at Cyient, and I'm thrilled to host an exciting panel here today. In this series, we will learn many stories of breaking barriers by global women leaders throughout their career. Today, we are here to celebrate the incredible journey and achievement of women leaders who are not just navigating, but leading the way in technology industry. These trailblazers are challenging stereotypes and paving the way for designing an inclusive tomorrow together. And today we have with us an esteemed panel of three power-packed leaders who bring together 100 plus years of rich experience in technology and engineering industry. And I'm really looking forward to learning from their story, their experiences, and strategy for driving change. Welcome, Sangeeta, Lata, and Rohini. So, so good to have you with us. And
thank you.
Welcome. Before I introduce all of you and dive into this exciting discussion, I want to just remind the audience, please do chime in with your questions, thoughts, comments in the comment section, so that we can have an engaging conversation and I can actually pick up one or two of the interesting questions and pose it to our panelists. So without further ado, I would like to introduce our panelists and get started on this inspiring hour of breaking barriers. Well, we have with us Sangeeta Singh, an accomplished global business leader. Sangeeta is General Manager ITES at Microsoft India. She specializes in ITES strategy with expertise in cloud and AI. Her vast experience spans across leadership roles at global tech firms like IBM, Infosys, focusing on enterprise technology services. She's been one of the youngest chief marketing officers at Wipro. She's recognized as a leading woman in technology and has won many accolades from World Economic Forum and Business Today and many more. She's on the board of NIIT and she mentors social entrepreneurs through social venture partners that is passionately supporting women aspirations. We also have with us our revered technologist, Dr. Rohini Srivatsa, the Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft India and South Asia, where she's focused on empowering customers and partners in India and South Asia with technology for inclusive and sustainable growth. Rohini began her career in R&D at AT&T Bell Labs in the US and then pivoted to strategy consulting at BCG, IBM, GBS in India and emerging markets. Her R&D and strategy experiences converged into her now decade-long CTO journey. And I must say, you know, when I was reading this out, I'm like, okay, let me see when her degrees close. You know, she holds an MBA from Wharton, PhD from University of Texas, Austin, and is an adjunct faculty at ISB Executive Education. And I understand she's still studying and there are more degrees to come. I think kudos to you, Rohini. You are definitely an inspiration for so many of us. Thank you for joining us. And finally, we have an engineer at heart who loves speed and adventure, be it in the sky or on land. Lata Chebrakulam is the Vice President and Head of Continental Automotive's Technology Center in India. She's leading 6,000 plus engineers in automotive technologies like autonomous mobility and vehicle networking. She's a former leader at Bosch and Siemens with diverse roles in engineering and business development. And she's a noted leader with 30 plus years of experience and has been named among India's top tech women leaders. She's very active at NASSCOM, at IEEE and Indo-German Tech Cooperation. And I understand she's also a certified coach who's extremely passionate about building high impact global technology teams. What a diverse panel, isn't it? Great. So let's get started with our first round of question. And Sangeeta, my first question is to you. Throughout your stupendous career, you have been a force to reckon with, continuously setting new benchmarks and inspiring many. Could you share key moments and learning from your journey that has been pivotal to shape you who you are today?
Well, first of all, Meenu, thank you for that. What can I say? A very humbling introduction, and I'm very proud to share the stage with you. Thank you, along with Lata and Rohini. A question about my journey. As I reflect back, I think what really worked was, number one, being in love with what I was doing, being in love with the team that I was working, being in love with the company that I was working for. And if I have to share what worked is, as I learned through my downs as much as I learned from my successes, is continue to be bold about the function, the job that you're working on, as in think about ideas that could be path breaking, that are sort of trend setting, and connect the dots with your teams on that big idea, but just be bold about the ambition that you have for the job that you're doing, for the company that you have. Two, I think that has worked is to be bold and ambitious about the teams that you have. And this was not who I was when I started my career, but I think it has evolved over a period of time, is to accept that team members would be at different points in their life. You know, some who would need a support of a different kind and the others who would need a support of a different kind. And, you know, continue to be bold and push for what they need within the organization. And finally, I think what has worked is self-belief. You know, the belief about that, yes, you can. And more so, you know, during the times that are not going well, there will be lots of advice that comes your way. And to take that advice as an input to the design of your bold idea and the design of your idea for your team, but not to really limit you. So I think that has really worked. And I must say that I think I've learned and I've been shaped more by my failures than by my success.
Well, that's you being modest, Sangeeta. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. Lata, I know you have had a stupendous journey as well for the last 3 decades. You have navigated through multiple roles and organization in automotive industry, which is quite frankly very well, very male dominant, right? What has been your journey like? What were your challenges, learning lessons that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, first of all, thanks, Minu, and very happy to be part of this panel. Yeah, while it is no secret that the automotive industry is still male-dominated, there are many women who have made a significant impact in India as well as in the global phase. So I started my automotive journey in mid-1990s, moved across geographies, roles seamlessly. That has enabled a lot of learning for me. And it also kept on increasing my passion for engineering and technology. So initially, I would say the acceptance of an Indian lady engineer in Germany in 1995, yeah, it has been a challenge. I've been to plants where there were not even basic facilities for women. So over a period of time, I worked with 3 major automotive supplier organizations. I worked in 3 different continents on different assignments. And there were many years where there were no women leaders on the table in the management team, right? So one of the challenges was basically altering the traditional stereotypes as well as the perceptions that have been historically defined some of the roles in the automotive sector. It was pretty much hard to change, right? The second thing is being auto, you know, engineered by heart, soul, whatever, right? So being in the test track, driving vehicles, all kinds of vehicles, be with the team on the ground to motivate the passionate engineers. So that's another challenge, but it's also a fun element. But that's something I have learned, that over a period of time, that you need to be with the team to co-create and to innovate with them, right? When I look back, I think we had hardly any role models to look up to. Yeah. And there was hardly any support system. If you look at whether it's a part-time work or work from home, there were the things which we have. It was unheard of at that time, right? So achieving an appropriate work-life integration was also a challenge, especially in this automotive industry. True. But what I would say the best part of our generation, I think for all of us, is that we are all quite tough. We are all resilient and we are ready to face any kind of challenges. So in the auto industry, we have come a very long way. I think maybe from a 5% in Continental, we have 31% women now. And we are a core automotive product development organization. So I think significant number change there. But whatever said and done, I would say that there are a few C's which has really helped me. The competence, the confidence, consistency, courage, communication, connections, all of things building another C, which is credibility, which is the key for acceptance in this kind of an industry. And I think it works. That's my journey.
Wow. I guess, you know, so we have another bold soul with us here, right, who has seen it all and faced all the struggles. Coming to Rohini, you have a fantastic career, right? I think I was frankly giving your example to my son. I'm like, you know what? She's still studying and she's still excelling, right? And she is one technologist that I've heard who could simplify things to such an extent that anybody, you know, be it a 12th grader or a chief technologist, could get it right. I'm sure even in your journey you have gone through, and you know, you have done it in multiple continents, multiple countries, you've studied in multiple countries, right? What have been some of the challenges that shaped you? And were there any aha moments, right?
Yeah, I think, so first of all, thank you for having me here. And it's really inspiring to listen to both Sangeeta and Lata. It always is a pleasure. And you always learn and reflect on your journey and connect the dots to others' journeys. So it's really very inspiring. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, what I have been able to, I would say that the consistency in my career journey has been about exploring. I think I've been open to exploring new areas, something that others may not have tried. And I think so if I kind of go back to my early days in the R&D world, when you are in R&D and you are, you know, working on topics that nobody else has at least pushed to the level that you're pushing, then you develop that courage or conviction or some sense of a personal inner compass to explore a topic that you may be the only person thinking about that deeply. And, you know, towards the end of your research, PhD area, etc., even your advisor actually doesn't have that much that the person can really help you with, because you are the one person who has thought about that topic deeply. That gives you, I guess, in very formative years, a sense of confidence, a sense of, adventure to look at new topics, and a sense of curiosity, right? And in a way, when I was finishing up, I remember my advisor saying to me that, you know, a PhD journey doesn't teach you what to learn. It teaches you how to learn. It teaches you why you need to always learn. So I think that sense of curiosity, sense of wonder, passion is what, I mean, you know, it's, I still feel it, right? I still get like, it's kind of goosebumps moment for me very often, right? And it's not something that I'm just sort of putting on as such. And I think that's what is needed in today's world, you know, when information, knowledge, content is for the asking, right? You know, you don't have to go anywhere. It's for the asking. The thing that's in short supply is curiosity. right? So I think that has been a common theme. But I think to your point about setbacks, yeah, I think I feel like I've been very, very fortunate that pretty much from my parents to my advisor to my first boss, I never felt like I was being treated any differently. I never really felt, I don't think I ever thought about, at least in my early career days, about my gender. I actually didn't think about it at all. And and I was fortunate that way to have mentors and managers who really inspired and felt like I could do anything. So I was able to just be myself, explore, do interesting things. And then when I moved into the world of consulting, which is, you know, much decade later, that was a different world. And I think that's what I meant by saying that I've not been afraid of trying new things. Sometimes what that means is, from a traditional career perspective, you are starting from a different rung of the ladder.
Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, you might have done your, you know, PhD, etc. So in the new world that you have entered, nobody cares you've done all that, right? It's irrelevant. And you are starting from a very different starting position. But I feel that's okay. I mean, I kind of enjoy it, and I look at it as an adventure. So I mean, like, you know, BCG, I was working with people who are my peers 15, 20 years younger than me. Right? I mean, one could keep a chip on one shoulder to say, okay, I'm enjoying. In fact, I have a good time with that. it's good.
Fantastic.
I think going back, and I'll just pause with that, is yes, of course, there are biases. Yes, of course, there are challenges. But I think I've tried to be good at what I do and not get too mentally bogged down with sort of perceived constraints. I remember one of my early days at BCG, one of my very good friends said to me, most constraints are mostly in the mind. And while I'm not being naive about it, there's no point being naive about it. I mean, you know, at our stage of life, at our age, let's be practical. But I think there is something to be said about liberating your mind from constraints. And I, you know, Lata spoke about that, Sangeeta spoke about that. But that's kind of in my journey.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that's emerging in all our journey is one, the courage to explore, the courage to experiment, right? The courage to take that bold step. And I think the second thing that I'm hearing from all of you is the resilience, right? Is that, you know, you did not shy away from the struggles. You did not shy away from what it comes with it, right? And, you know, I think that brings me to the question. I know, Sangeeta, I have seen you in action and I have seen you as a leader who has the power of making things happen. And Rohini, that's what we used to, you know Sangeeta about, right? How do you think that mindset, that ethos, Sangeeta, helped you create opportunities, not just for yourself, right, but also for people around you?
So Meenu, two parts to your question. One, how do you make things happen and how do you create opportunities for others, right? Yeah, you know, so I've worked now for 33 years, clearly has been a very long journey and many life-shaping moments. I think the early part of my journey was a very different journey. And the second half has been a very different journey. I think the second half of my journey has been a more self-aware journey, more aware of the surroundings, etc. But the first half, I think... I don't know what it was. I was just possessed about making dreams happen, you know? I mean, the word hallucination is relevant now and people can understand. I was hallucinating from day zero, you know? I remember, Meenu, in our days in marketing, when I had a new hire from an IIM Bangalore and I was not with an IIM background. And the person was looking at me and said, like, what is she going to tell me about what I need to do? Yeah. And I was telling them, you know, how the marketing in Wipro has to be published in Harvard Business Review and I don't know, all kinds of dreams that I had about it, right? And then I think the single-minded focus on orchestrating to making it happen. But, you know, there was one life-shaping moment is when one of my leaders gave me an opportunity early enough in my life, and you know who I'm talking about, right? And that gave me a sense of energy in my life that I have forever paid it forward, in the sense, given opportunities to people early on. Some I have done it successfully, some I have not been that successful. But yeah, I think even now, what drives me and what keeps me alive is this desire or the dream of wanting to do something that's been like, that I think is possible, which seems impossible to a lot. And then working with people without any egos. But sometimes I must have been very hard on people as well, you know, that did not really relate to my vision. But in my second half of my career, I have paused, I have made sure I get them on board with my dream and vision as well. Much better than before, but not the best yet. I still have work to be done on that.
Well, that's again you being humble, Sangeeta. I think one thing is very clear that, you know, the mindset that you're talking about is unconstrain your mindset, right? don't shy away from dreaming. I think that's exactly, Rohini, when you were talking about, right? Just because it's an unknown, uncharted path and territory, don't shy away from exploring and dreaming. And that brings me to, Lata, I know we talked a little bit about how academia, right, can really change the game. How we as an industry and the collaboration with academia can really change the game for innovation, for exploration, for experimentation, right? And I know you're very passionate about this. Do you want to, you know, share some experience and throw some light on that?
So my belief is that now, if you look at any organization or any industry, I think we have come to a stage where one organization cannot exist without the other. There's a lot of, you know, collaboration that happens across. And I think I very strongly believe in co-creation through collaboration. Whether it is co-creation with, the internal organization, external organization, academia, industry bodies, especially in an area where I work, like mobility, this is really very much critical that we live this collaboration and co-creating together, right? So academia has always been a very interesting partner for us. Basically, we need to bridge the kind of theoretical research which they have, and they don't have the practical application. And I think we have the practical application and sometimes not the deep technical know-how, right? So bringing them together is something which is good. And I strongly believe that such kind of collaboration harnesses a kind of wealth of benefits, serving as a bridge. And these kind of alliances, they act as a conduit to the rich intellectual resources as well as the state-of-art research conducted within the university walls, I would call it, to offer a competitive edge in innovation, right? So academia, in turn, gains from the practical perspective, industry experience, and the financial resources that all of us can provide as an organization. And together, it's a kind of a symbiotic relationship that we are looking at that can address very complex challenges, and you can really push the technology boundaries and also have certain, ignite the groundbreaking achievement. For example, what we do in our organization is, there are certain concepts that we want to bring into the market maybe 3 years down the line, right? So we have collaborated with most of the major universities in India, the IITs and IISCs and so on. And then we work with certain professors and then see how we can bring this technology together to the market. So I think fostering a relationship that will translate into a very futuristic opportunity, a business opportunity, something that we are looking at. And of course, the universities also, they also benefit from these kind of exchanges, what we provide here. The second thing which I really love working with universities is that about talent. So it's even though we are telling that India, we have a lot of talent, readily available talent, the huge talent market. But if you ask all of us in this call whether we have really industry-ready talent, I think the answer is no. Yeah, we have very, very less percentage of industry-ready talent. So I think it's a give back that from the industry that we need to do, how to support them to create the industry-ready talent. So we do a lot of work with, the universities to actually develop the faculties. I sit in the board of some universities to also, talk about what kind of curriculum is valid for the future, whether it is mechanical, product, electronics, comm science, AI, everything. We introduce our own electives from Continental in some universities, and we try to hire people from there. So I think every organization, I think it's also a responsibility for all of us to do this give back to our country, because I think the talent pool is there, but whether there's a ready talent pool is always a question. So I'm pretty passionate about it. And if you look at the research that we have done with various organizations, we have got significantly good amount of results, I would say, specifically coming off India market. Yeah, because we do a lot of local for local for the India market. The bringing out product, low-cost product for India market is actually a key to one of the success that we have. And for that, using the academia collaboration, using the other industry collaborations is actually a key for Continental.
I think that's really inspiring. And do you see specialized programs, collaboration, Lata, coming up that's going to maybe leapfrog the number of opportunities we create for women? Do you see that as a part of this collaboration?
See, most of us also focus on women in engineering, women in manufacturing. There are different programs which are, you know, in these lines. Also the organizations like NASSCOM, they are also looking at bringing programs which can upskill women in a much, you know, faster way. So I think gender is not the topic here, but gender, of course, that also needs focus. But mostly, I think it's a broad-based approach that we are doing, how to build ready talent, how to build a high-tech talent from India, where we can contribute towards the globe. That's the topic, yeah.
Great. Thanks, Lata. And Rohini, you've spent so much time with academia, right? And AI is definitely on tip of everybody's tongue. If we look at the entire AI landscape, do you see that can be a disruptor in rebalancing the future for women technologists? And, you know, the reason I wanted to stay with women technologists and skill is, as you mentioned, you know, earlier in the conversation, that sometimes our starting line is very different from others. Do you see that technology and AI is going to play a disruptive role there? What are your thoughts on that?
So I think, you know, AI is a general purpose technology, is going to be in every walk of life. I think for women, I would say technology by itself is, tech sector by itself is an area that women can and should enter for so many reasons, right? One is the fact that every sector is becoming tech enabled. Every sector, in fact, there are more people being hired with technology background or technical background in industries that are not traditionally called the tech industry, right? Because every industry is becoming more and more tech enabled. So therefore, there's just going to be more opportunities. Now, I think what AI does is that the ability for anybody, and that's cross genders, to learn the content as well as different approaches to learning is just so pervasive that one doesn't really it's like I was mentioning earlier. I think it's just the quest for learning itself is the primary requirement. So I think the ability for women to embrace tech, and in particular AI, there couldn't be a better time than today. Second point would say that, you know, while I would like to challenge the fact that women are less into coding, but even if one were to assume, or one were to say, okay, there is probably more women could do that. But I think because AI is also making so much just conversational, right? I mean, the ability to build applications with natural language, with very low code, no code type of interactions is also changing the whole entry barrier. If I were to say you are, let's say, for example, for any reason, taking some time off for some reasons, right? I mean, women do have on-ramps, off-ramps in their careers. I have taken enough number of off-ramps and then have come back on, into this thing. And I'm thinking, okay, if I do that, and if I have to come back and I know how to think from an analytical and conceptual perspective, even if I've forgotten the syntax, who cares? the AI is going to be able to write it for you. I mean, it's. I think that ability to then be a problem solver and really think conceptually, analytically, problem solving is the going to be the key skill. So, I feel that one from a economic perspective. From a country's growth and just GDP growth perspective, just the inclusion of women is just an imperative. It's not a gender question at all. Then second point is that if every part of the economy is becoming more and more tech enabled, then you need women to be in tech, because if every part of the economy is required to fire to grow, then you need every part of the economy to have women. And third, the last part which you mentioned about AI, which I will disclose with that, to say that, look, AI today is at a getting a lot of front page type of news, but it's not a new technology. And it's been there for some time. Of course, there's a very significant paradigm shift that we are in the middle of right now. But it's going to continue. It is exponentially going to continue. But having said that, I think the ability for AI to be bias free, to engage with the gender related algorithms, which are going to become part of decisions in every walk of life, it needs diversity on across many dimensions, gender being one of them. And only when you have diverse teams can you make, will you make products and algorithms and your systems that are human centric and are the right kind of decision makers that we would like to have embedded in our society. So I think those are three or four reasons why I feel women, you know, need to be in technology, and there's no better time to engage in this field.
Thanks, Rohini. Rohini, you touched upon you know, the biases which are still there in AI, right? And there is one point of view to look at, like you mentioned, right? It's a turning point where pretty much the general purpose technology is getting a front page news everywhere. And there have been a lot of debate on both sides of the table, right? Is this the panacea for everything? Or is this something that we need to be a little skeptical about? What's your point of view on that?
Look, every tool, every technology in history has had both advantages as well as risks. And, you know, our Microsoft president, Brad, has a very good book to read on that, Tools and Weapons, right? Every technology has got, is both a tool and a weapon. AI is no different. And I think the ability to say that it's a panacea, that you just sort of brush AI over every problem, that would be both incorrect as well as delusionary, yeah. If I would put it that way. I think one has to look at it in three ways. One, there were problems today that you can solve more efficiently. Two, there are problems that you could not solve today that you could potentially solve in a way that that is groundbreaking. Three, yeah. There are problems you didn't even consider that you could solve.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, one could go give examples on and on. I mean, think about you know, rare cases of particular diseases which happen one in a million cases. No doctor is going to be aware and understand what that particular patient requires. Today, AI can bring the entire world's medical knowledge and history and what has been done in the healthcare world at the tips of that doctor's hands. Imagine what that does. I mean, I think there are so many cases that we didn't even think of them within our realm of possibility or what can be done. And it goes across sectors. So I feel that while I'm very cognizant of risks and challenges, which require us to be very thoughtful. That was my earlier comment about diversity across multiple dimensions and be able to ask the right questions, be able to be courageous about it. But I think the potential to do to solve a class of problems, whether food security, agriculture, water, I mean, you know, you can, the list is very long. We can keep having that conversation. I think that the pie has to be much bigger. The pie has to be expanded. It's actually a very big pie expansion exercise we are looking at right now.
True. I think, you know, absolutely spot on, Rohini. Thank you so much. And if we take inclusion and technology, right? One is, what does inclusion mean to you? I mean, you know, Rohini also touched upon that, you know, diversity is just not limited to gender, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many more dimensions to it. Inclusion is no longer just about being, being inclusive from a gender perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And you lead such a large team of 6,000 plus engineers, right? What does inclusion mean to you? And how do you see, is there a play of technology? Is there 2-3 game changers that's helping you do this better?
Okay. So I think, I mean, I was very keenly watching what Rohini was telling. I think she brought the technology angle. So let me talk from the people angle here, yeah, because I handle large teams. And for me, inclusion is about how all the employees experience the workplace, yeah, and the degree to which our organization can embrace all of them and enabling them to make meaningful contributions. And there should be a strong leadership commitment to it. So that's what inclusion is to me. And if it can be aided by technology, well and good. But by all means, that should happen, right? Yeah. So personally, for me, I strongly believe that, you know, the D, E, and I, it has to coexist. And that's a very powerful combination that can create a true impact. And a better culture starts with, you know, open conversation. So by improving the quality of the conversation, in everyday conversation in an organization, that itself will develop a culture of increased openness, respect for differences and understanding, which actually can, you know, fuel much more collaboration, much more innovation and greater effectiveness. And mostly the industries like us, the tech industry, you know, we thrive a lot on innovation, right? And I think this is it is very important that this kind of an inclusion diversity is there as a fabric into the organization, and ensure that, I think Rohini also touched upon it earlier, ensure that, you know, it's diverse talent is represented. It's not gender diversity alone. It's all kind of diversity that we can bring in together. And coming to people, it also talks about bringing equal opportunity. And I think technology can play a very important role in bringing equal opportunities to gender. So that can help us to be much more fair and kind of transparent, yeah? But at the same time, it's not only the technology, but it is also the leadership and the culture of the organization makes an impact. For example, how do you really, if we can tell very easily, telling that, you know, you promote openness and you tackle bias, you tackle microaggression, but how do you live it, you know, and what kind of leadership accountability is there, and what kind of awareness is existing in the leadership itself? I think all these play a very important role. So technology can help to some extent, but at the same time, how do you live it? Because finally, we are dealing with human beings, and you know, and we need to live it. Starting at every level of the organization has to really live it. So that's my take on it. And I somehow feel that only if you have an inclusive workplace, people feel comfortable, people feel secure, and people feel like really contributing to their highest potential. Otherwise, I think we kind of limit them in some form or the other, which is, you know, which is really not the most productive way for an organization to run.
Right, right. I think essentially, Lata, what you're saying is if you have the psychological safety, then people find it to experiment and innovate, right? Be it with technology, without technology. And AI can be an accelerator, but you've got to have that fundamental culture, right? Right.
Yeah, fundamental culture. And I think it is also that, you know, the leadership has to really exhibit that in every discussion, in every opportunity, when you have your talent management conferences, and when you publish your opportunities in your recruitment team. Starting from that, I think we should be really living that culture every day. And that's the only way to do it. Technology can aid it. That's my take on it. Yeah.
True, true. Yeah. Right. You know, we talked about culture, we talked about providing the psychological safety, we talked about our courage, resilience. You know, the fact of the matter is all of us are in a very fast-paced industry. All of us have gone through those career phases where we were like, you know, we cannot stop right now. We have to keep on running the race, right? We just cannot pause. And Sangeeta, that brings me to you. What's your advice, you know? Is there a balance between racing and pacing? Where is that?
Well, that's a very profound question. To each its own, Meenu. And from my life, all I can say is that, you know, we could plan for racing, but be prepared for the pacing as well, you know, and sort of anticipate that coming, especially now, when our, I would like to imagine that our careers are going to be as long as we would like it to be, you know, especially with all the discussions around inclusivity, diversity, and the way everybody is pushing the boundaries on how long we want to work, how long we heard it from Rohini, you know, be that explorer. So, and I feel that each has its own sort of joys that come with it. You know, when you're racing, there is a certain sort of joy that you receive. There are certain learnings. And as you're pacing, you know, you have the moment to sort of pause, reflect, understand yourself better, understand the environment around you better, really sort of plan how you're going to race again. And mm-hmm. so it could be many cycles of racing and pacing that makes your career, you know. In my case, Meenu, I think the pacing was not planned. Actually, when I was absolutely, everything was going really well, you know, I had to pace it out. I was miserable because I never realized that this can ever happen. Now, whenever anybody comes to me, I'm like, God, you've got this real moment to pace it. Make the most of it. You know, I know my leaders had told me, take 6 weeks off. Just go do something. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm not going to do that. I got to get back into the race, you know. But I think to everybody who's listening, and I'm sure Lata and Rohini would have sort of similar experiences, is to expect life to have the race and pace and be comfortable with both. Each has its own sort of learnings and joys that come with it. Did I answer your question, Meenu?
Yeah, it's very profound, and I really hope it's assuring to so many of us who are listening, because, you know, in our passion to race, we get so carried away that we forget that it's okay to pause,
yeah,
you know, and reflect and then pace again, you know. And yeah, we all have our own journeys, and we should be proud of our own journeys. Like Rohini, you mentioned, right, that you have been off ramp so many times and you got back, and that's absolutely okay. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to just add to what Sangeeta was saying. I think, and, you know, just to tell the audience also, I think, look, we are no longer in a world where we'll study and then we'll work and then we'll retire. I think people who are getting into the work right now mm-hmm. are going to have many careers.
Yeah.
Not just many jobs. They're going to have many careers.
Yeah.
Which means that. And I like to sometimes think of this being my third career. I plan to have another three careers, right? So, I mean, you know, I may do other things, but, you know, this is my third career, actually, if I just look at it. But where I'm trying to go is, right, that one, to what Sangeeta was saying, one has to remember that it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah.
Two is, when you do take the pacing and the time to pace, do what energizes you. And it doesn't always have to be work-related. You could do things which are completely different, because you don't realize how that actually rejuvenates you to come back when you're ready to race.
True.
Even if you're doing something for taking care of your elderly people or anything, any other reason, right? Take that moment and cherish it. And cherish it, because it is adding to your personality. It is adding to your ability to empathize. It is adding to your ability to lead teams. May not realize it, but later on you will say, you know, I learned something there that I would not have learned if I had not had that experience.
True. Lata, I know.
I would like to add, I really like what Rohini tells, and this is something which I tell my teams very often, that, you know, that it's a marathon. Yeah, so which means that, you know, sometimes you need to pause, you need to, you know, have some water or maybe something, you need to energize yourself, you need to calm your mind down and then still have an aim, you know, look at your target and then run, right? So that is really required. And I also strongly believe that it is important to switch off very often.
Yeah.
And this is something with most of the new generation can't do. They either, you know, I think even a digi detoxification is not possible. And even to completely switch off or be mindful, completely mindful on a topic which can energize you. I think it's getting completely out of way for a lot of people, because people can't even get away from their smartphones for even an hour or two. And then we talk about relaxation, right? So Actually, you need to really find out how do you do this integration. I always say there's no work-life balance. It is a work-life integration, and it works differently for different set of people. Yeah. And how do you energize? And you can't follow anybody else's path. It is your own path, and you need to carve it out. You need to find out what works for you and then take these pauses and then run. Otherwise, we will not have enough fuel. Because I come from the auto industry, I always talk about fuel. So it's like, you know, you don't have enough fuel to get to your the final goal, right? You will have a breakdown somewhere, and then you can't move forward.
Yeah. I mean, and Lata Sangeeta mentioned about one such pivotal moment in her life, which was pretty much like a wake-up call. Were there any pivotal time in your life where you really realized this and said, you know what, I'm going to live by this principle, and then I'm also going to advise and mentor everybody that I meet about this principle? Any experiences that you would want to shed some light on?
I would say the same example of, you know, I somehow felt at some point of time that the smartphone is controlling my life. You know? When I'm at a breakfast table, a mail comes and I have to look at it. Yeah, a message comes, I have to look at it. And then, you know, it's like a FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. Nothing happens. Then I realized that nothing happens. If you're not in the office even for a week, nothing happens. You know, things go on. It is only that you really think that if you're not around, if you're not replying to that mail in that 1 minute, something really happened, right? So I think now I've got over that. It took some time for me to get. So when I'm with family, I need to have that space. When I'm in my space, I need to have that space. So I kind of compartmentalize. And one recent thing which I also experimented, which is not really a success, but I experimented, is that I started using a phone without a SIM card, okay? And when I want to pull mails, I just connect it to the Wi-Fi or maybe I connect it to the hotspot, yeah? So I don't want the phone to control my life. I rather want me to have control on what I want to do. So I tried experimenting for some time, not too much of a disaster, but I've still got back to that. I'm trying to practice that a little bit more. And I tell to everybody that, you know, whenever you want to take deserved breaks, if you want to spend time with your children, with your family, don't feel guilty about it, right? Yeah. And there's nothing is going to happen if you are taking off. The company will run as it is. Yeah. And if something is really required, somebody will reach out to you. So this is what I had to tell in my mentoring conversations, that you need to have these well-deserved breaks, recharge, rejuvenate, and then run.
You know, and that's a great advice. I think that's a great mentoring advice that you're talking about, Lata. And I know Sangeeta, Rohini, both of you have mentored thousands and hundreds of people. What would be the top one advice that you have given most number of time to your mentees and that have probably changed their lives or changed their path? Did you really feel proud of that it was so authentic that fundamentally can change lives? Rohini, Sangeeta, any of you can take that up.
You want to start, Sangeeta?
Go ahead, Rohini. I'm still learning from you.
So I think, one thing which I've come to realize is the power of coaching as compared with mentoring. And I think I've come to realize that helping somebody determine what makes them excited, what they enjoy doing, or what mm-hmm. drives them, right? That could be the greatest gift you could give to somebody. Because you're telling, like we were discussing earlier, everybody's path is different. And if somebody had a very directed question to say, I want to learn this, would you have any advice to learn this? That's a different question. That's a very direct question, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of, I think helping people determine what they would want to do and help them discover it for themselves is probably the greatest gift you can give. And I think the few times that I've been able to engage with people to sort of say, okay, this is what I would like to do with my career, or if I'm looking to go back to school, or if I'm going to try a different job, and they just have been able to talk it out. And if, let's say, for their example, they were looking at some challenge at home, whatever, if they're able to talk it out and find their own inner voice, I found the greatest satisfaction there. Because at the end of the day, I think most of us deep inside at the end of the day have to have that own inner compass. And helping people discover that compass is to me feels just like I've done a good job that day.
Wow. That's very powerful. Sangeeta, over to you.
Yeah, actually, very similar to what Rohini said. For me, mentorship early on and even now is about, you know, spotting talent and giving them opportunities early on, because I feel that, you know, sometimes just giving them that opportunity early on gets them excited, energized about what they would like to do, sort of believing in them even before they believed in themselves is my form of mentorship. And the second was stay invested, but be real with them. As much as I would like to be the wind beneath their sails, but I would also keep them very grounded. And for that, it was important to build a very trusted relationship, you know, build that level of trust that you have. The other thing I would say is listening and just giving people that opportunity to be themselves at every stage is also a form of mentorship. And don't wait for people to be your mentee. You can mentor them in every interaction by just listening and asking them the questions and just be interested in them.
Yeah. And I can proudly say, Sangeeta, I have been one of your mentees. I have worked for you in your team. And one of the biggest lessons I have learned as your mentee is, and you mentioned that in your first couple of minutes, right? It's to be bold and believe in yourself, because, you know, at that point in career, you might have so many dilemmas, right? So many questions, so many people might be doubting you or questioning you, but to stay centered and stay committed needs a very different power, right? And we were talking about it before we went live, Lata, that when we talk about feeling guilty, right, I think you mentioned that, you know, the whole FOMO part of it. Many of us sometimes feel so guilty that, you know, am I being the right partner? Am I being the right mother? Am I being the perfect colleague? Am I being the perfect boss? I think this whole fallacy of perfection is another thing, you know, that I learned a lot, Sangeeta, where you said, you know, are you doing your best to what you want to do instead of trying to be perfect? And frankly speaking, that made half of my life guilt-free, right? I think that's been one of the advices that I had taken very seriously in my life. But Lata, how about you, right? What are those two, three things that you've really coached and you think it's fundamentally important that can shape people's careers and lives?
So when you talk about coaching, and especially when you sit in leadership position, see, I very strongly believe that leadership is a privilege. Leadership is an honor that comes with a huge responsibility of being an enabler to shape up the life and the career of many people who work with you, right? So it's a kind of, it kind of operate on a principle that people are naturally creative, they are resourceful, they are capable, they are self-motivated. But the thing is that, you know, how do you really challenge themselves to be a better avatar of themselves? I think Rohini was mentioning that, you know, it has to come from within them. It's not by teaching them, but it is challenging them and then, you know, asking them the right questions, maybe providing a support system for development. So it's a lot to do with, in terms of personality of a leader, it's a lot to do with empathy, compassionate leadership, a little bit of active listening, ability not to judge and focus on opportunities than failure. There's a lot of things which we need to do where we can create a very safe and supportive environment, but yet challenging, combined with empowerment, developing of new skills and fostering creativity. I think so these are kind of things which we need to do. And when you specifically talk about, since it is a women's topic today in terms of coaching, mentoring, what I would like to tell is, for most of the women colleagues, what I tell is that don't even talk about anything called work-life balance if you're serious about your careers. Yeah, you talk about work-life integration. How do you beautifully integrate both so that you're not stressed out? That is the thing. So don't tell that, you know, 9 to 5, I'm working, and then 5 to 8, I do this. So you can't really have this boundary. So how do you enroll your family, your friends, the people who matters to you in your journey of career, and vice versa. And sometimes be vulnerable about it, be open about it. I think that really helps. You know, sometimes if you have a sick child and then you want to come to office, it's okay to tell him the order. You don't have to act like a superwoman. You can always tell, hey, I have a problem at home. I can't make it. Can you step in for me? But we don't do it, right? Sometimes we have the superwoman syndrome and we try to be the most brave one. And, many times mess it up also. That's a different story. So how do you balance it? This is one part which I talk about, work-life integration. And the second thing is about having meaningful goals. Yeah, whether it is for a second career or a third career, or whatever you want to do, have meaningful goals. And I always quote this story of Alice in Wonderland. It's you talk about, the Cheshire Cat. Alice goes and asks the Cheshire Cat, which way do I take? And the cat says, it depends a lot on where you want to go. So the question is, do you really know where you want to go, or you are just doing a mentoring coaching to reach somewhere? Somewhere for you and somewhere for me, it will be very different. They always tell you, you need to have a personalized goal for you, a personalized goal that will integrate your personal and professional life, which is not taxing for you. It has to go hand in hand with a good amount of harmony. So these are two things which I very often talk to mentees who are women.
I think that's so assuring, Lata. I remember very early on in my career, there was this comment that I read that, chin up princes, else the crown falls. And frankly speaking, I believed too many times on it. And then it's only later in the career you realize that it's okay for the crown to fall once in a while. You don't need to be that princess and queen all the time, right? You can be your vulnerable self for once. I think the conversation is becoming very heavy. I'm going to change tracks. And so here is a couple of rapid fire questions for all of you before we close and we hear any more comments from the audience. What does Lata do when she's not working?
Dreaming.
Okay. What is Lata passionate about?
Flying.
Interesting. Interesting. Fantastic. And Rohini and Sangeeta, in case you thought I'm going to ask you the same question, that's not the case. So what is your chill out mantra after a marathon day, Rohini?
I just love reading. I just, would like to have a nice cup of tea and read. That's very, very, very,
And apart from technology and AI, what is one superpower you wish you have?
Oh, gosh. I wish I could sing well.
Classical?
Yeah. I'm at it, but yeah, I wish I could be really good at it.
Well, we definitely have now plans to do another LinkedIn Live, which is going to be all about...
I don't think that's happening, but...
The question I have for you, Sangeeta, is if you weren't a business leader, who would you be?
A terrific homemaker.
Oh, wow. And what part of that role did you enjoy the most?
Just being the support for the entire family and see them do well. That's how I had anticipated my life, but it shaped differently.
Well, one question that I have from audiences, and anyone of you can take it up, is what's that one advice you will give your own 20-year self?
I would say I should have changed roles more often. I did a stint in sales. I did a stint in R&D, but probably I could have done maybe a role in finance in between, a role in HR in between, so that I'm a much more well-rounded professional. I would have liked to do that.
I wish I was, more people-centric than I was early in my career. I think I was a very strong analytical problem solver, a technical person, right? I developed the ability to really think about the people element of making things work a bit later. I wish I had thought about, I really gotten that, you know, at the end of the day, it's about people. I wish I had learned that much earlier in my life.
Got it. Any quick final one sentence, Sangeeta, for your younger self?
Anger management.
Oh, wow.
I wish I had done a better job of that and even understood that that is something that I could. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. But better late than never.
Well, that's really candid and that's really honest. And I think we are on top of the hour. And I can say, team, that it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking your time out, not just sharing your remarkable journey, but your profound insights on your roles, on your thoughts, on your principles and values. And I'm sure we will carry forward this inspirational discussion forward. And I would like to thank all our audience to keep this discussion engaging and alive. Thank you so much all for joining us. And as I say, let's keep breaking barriers so that stay broken. Thank you so much again.
Thanks, thank Rohini. You, Meenu, for conducting this really well. And it was great to meet Lata and Rohini.
Yes, thank likewise. You. Thank you.
Thank you. And bye-bye.